You can't delegate digital transformation for your company. You and your executives have to own it. Executives need to engage, embrace, and adopt new ways of working with the latest in emerging technologies. And that's where we come in. Welcome to Embracing Change. The business world is changing at a faster pace than it ever has, and companies need to keep up. We interview the most interesting CEOs, CMOs, and other executives to talk about their challenges with digital transformation in their industry. This is Embracing Change, and this is your host, Gerardo Carrick.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Embracing Change, a podcast about digital transformation. My guest today is Reinaldo Padua, Chief Brand Officer of Belief Company, a BevTech that is present in more than 30 countries in the Americas and around the world. Hi, Reinaldo. How are you?
Hello, Jerry. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah. I'm very good. Reinaldo and I, you know, for our audience, we know each other for many, many years because he used to live in Atlanta. He used to work for Coke and live in Atlanta where we're based for many, many years.
That's correct. Yes.
And you traveled around with Coke, right? Coke took you around the world.
Yeah. I work in Coca-Cola for about 14 years. The first five were in Atlanta. I joined Coke after actually working in a consulting project with Coca-Cola. I did a couple of projects while I was with the Siemens Group. Uh-huh. And it looks like they like what they saw in the project, and they offered me to translate the PowerPoint into real life, and that's the interview with the company. And long story short, I joined Coca-Cola. I worked first in the North America business for about 5 years, and then I decided to start the international tour, which took me first to South America, to Colombia, which was a great opportunity to get to know that market, but also for my kids, who were all three of them born in Atlanta, to really get their Spanish right. So I was there for 3 years, then over 3 years in Costa Rica. And then from there, I decided to venture into outside the Americas. So I went to Africa to manage the East and South Africa business from Kenya, which was an amazing experience. Very different from a lot of the things that I have done before, but amazing, both personal and professional experience. Mm-hmm. And then being there at Coca-Cola, I got a call from a good day, a lucky day from a headhunter with an amazing opportunity to work in Belief. So I joined Belief a year and a half ago.
That's fantastic. And of course, everybody knows Coca-Cola. I mean, it's one of the, if not the best known brand in the world. But I'm not sure if a lot of people know about Belief, right? So don't we talk a little bit about Belief? So that gives us the context to the conversation we're going to be having, which is, by the way, fascinating because it's all about the challenger marketing, right? So
yeah, exactly. Yeah, Belief is a very interesting company. We define ourselves as a Bev Tech, and the reason why is that the way that we operate is closer to a tech company. We innovate through MVP and agile approach. Pretty much most of our marketing is digitally based. Our research is all digitally based with consumers, and the way that we develop our formulas, our communication, our interaction with consumers is very close to the way that the digital companies operate. Mm-hmm. It is a company with the mission of taking the goodness of the Latin American nature to consumers around the world.
Okay.
And the way that we think about that goodness is in two ways. One is about the functionality that you get from the fruits, from the roots, from the herbs in Latin America, which are very well known to have a lot of properties and functional benefits, but also about the emotional benefits related to Latin America and what Latin America represents to other parts in the world. For example, when I was in Africa, one of the things, you know, both being in Africa and being in the US and working in Europe too, is that you understand the diversity is really a great asset in Latin America. It is in the DNA of the Latin American culture. There is influence from pretty much everywhere in the world, from Africa, from Europe, from Asia, from the local, you know, cultures. And that diversity brings a great example, you know, to other countries or cultures that are embracing that now. And also the joy and the celebration. You know, many people, when they think about, you know, celebrating, they think about Latin American music, they think about, you know, Latin American food, Latin American celebration. So Latin America represents all that. Yeah, exactly. So we represent all that, and our brands embrace that too. So, for example, we have now a brand that was launched 2 years ago in the U.S. Now it's taking critical mass. It's called Oka. It's a plant-based organic energy drink. It's an energy drink that basically provides sustained energy. It doesn't give you kind of the jitters and the crashes of the traditional energy drinks. It's more a sustained energy. And the most important ingredient there, the two most important ingredients are the tapioca, which, you know, we source from Brazil, and the agave syrup, which we source from Mexico. So two very important and native ingredients from Latin America that take that benefit to consumers. Now we are in the US. We launched in China. Last year, we were there in the most important health and fitness event in Hong Kong. That was last November. And we're starting to launch in other markets around Latin America and Europe. So it's a brand that embraces the benefits from the functional perspective, because it gives you that sustained energy with no jitters, no crash, but also embraces that culture of, you know, the Brazilian, that is about, you know, the happiness of life, enjoying the life without those, you know, crazy, you know, peaks and crashes, but more in a sustained way.
Of course. So I find very interesting, you know, the whole branding concept, right? And that is rooted in Latin American culture and all of the positive values associated with it. So I think that's clear and it's fantastic. But something that caught my attention from what you initially said was about being a beverage company that is almost like a BevTech, right? In the way it behaves. So I'd like to understand more about that, but I would like to ask you a question to provide some context to, you know, to that, which is big brands, right? Let's say established brands, incumbents. What are their challenges in this multi-connected world? What are they doing or they're not capable of doing that smaller companies like belief can do?
I will say, and maybe let me talk about it from my own experience at Coke. I will say that one of the most important challenges is consistency. In a world where first, you when you are a global brand, you may have very different positions in different markets. For example, when I was in Africa, in markets like South Africa or Kenya, Coca-Cola is the leader by far, you know, 80-90% share in the segment, in the category. But then you have a market like you know, Tanzania, where we are a challenger to Pepsi, you know, whole different situation, right? So how can you adapt your strategy? You know, to in one case you are a leader, in another case you are a challenger, but also at the same time remain consistent, you know, to the values of the brand, to the position of the brand. That's a challenge that you face as a bigger company. Also, you face the challenge of you have a kind of an expectation from your partners about the kind of media that you do, the kind of advertising that you do, and sometimes it is rooted in the old ways. You know, because a bottling, you know, partner expecting you to be on TV and to be in out of home, And maybe that's not the most effective or efficient way to get to your target in a given market. Mm-hmm. So you have to deal with that. While when you are a smaller brand, it's almost like you have no option, okay? Because as a smaller brand, you have to do three things really well. The first one is that you need to understand your consumer better than the leader, okay? You need to go deeper and understand the consumer. You need to start small because you don't have the resources to go frontal versus, you know, a leader. So you need to be able to segment the market into smaller pieces and start owning the smaller pieces. And you also need to listen very well to adjust your proposition very quickly, because you're trying to get the weak point of the leader. So you have to pivot very quickly to do that. And the only way that you can do that with the technology that you have today is through digital tools. There is no way to do that in the traditional market. So that's why, you know, as a challenger, as an insurgent, you know, in the category, we have to rely on digital, I mean, all the way from the research to the execution in the market.
Wow. And that, in a way, becomes an advantage. It comes from a position of challenger, but it ends up becoming an advantage against an incumbent. Because you're more responsive to what customers are actually wanting and needing.
Of course, you know, the leader will always have the you know, deeper pockets, and we have the advantage of the equity and the awareness in the market. But I would say that I enjoy more being a challenger. I think that it from the professional standpoint, it keeps you on your toes and keep you very alert, you know, of what you need to do. It's, you know, from the intellectual standpoint, it's more demanding. So you have a lot of fun, you know, doing this. But at the same time, as you said, you have an advantage. You are smaller. You have the advantage of the nimble, and but you have to act like that. I mean, you cannot go to the old ways, because you quickly realize that you can become the Goliath, you know, in the story versus the David, which is the one that you have to be as a challenger.
Of course. So I would love it if you could help paint this picture with an example. I remember when you and I talked about how challenger brands are using digital marketing to improve products and campaigns, and you gave me an example about using consumer feedback through QR codes. I thought that was a very interesting example of how you could actually be very agile in reformulation of product versus what a large company would do. Would you mind sharing that example?
I'll share one recent example. We have a brand that is a fascinating brand. It's I call it a miracle. It's called Wittig. Okay, and it's a volcanic natural sparkling water that comes from the tallest volcano in Ecuador. Okay, from the Cotopaxi, the tallest mountain that actually the water, when it melts from the glacier, goes through a volcano and produces naturally sparkling water. It's a brand that has done very well. It's very well recognized in the market. However, we had a challenge. We were the leaders in the category, and we needed to expand to other occasions to keep growing the brand. And what we discovered is that our consumers will mix our brand, our water, with lemon, and they call it Imperial Lemonade, okay? And they will combine, and they will drink that with their food, with their meals, okay? So we launched that last year, okay? With the aim of starting to compete in the meals occasion, okay? And our logic was, okay, because we don't have caffeine, we have an advantage versus Coke and Pepsi at night, okay? So you can have your dinner with our Imperial Lemonade from Wittig, and you will not have, you know, this caffeine in your system, and you can go to bed earlier, and you don't have all this. Well, that was our hypothesis. I will say that in 3 weeks, we very quickly learned that that was not the right hypothesis. Actually, people were telling us, you know, it's not about dinner. It is about seafood. We love when we drink your wheat lemonade with seafood because the pairing between the lime and the seafood is just amazing. And mm-hmm. we're starting to see, you know, this feedback consistently. And in the middle of that, we said, guys.
And how are people giving you that feedback? You know, what's the mechanism for the feedback?
Okay, we have that's one thing that has worked really well with our product. That we have a QR code mm-hmm. in the back panel of the product, okay? Uh-huh. And consumers will scan that, and it will ask you a couple of questions. Usually it's 1-2 questions, and people, you know, are very receptive to that. They're interested in participating in being part of the brand. Mm-hmm. And one of the questions was, you know, how are you eating this? And they will tell you, you know, at this meal. So it was not dinner. Okay, well, we're trying to achieve what was not what they were doing. But at the same time, they were telling us, you were asking what kind of food you're eating with that. So there is kind of the traditional, you know, food. There is the salads. We have different kind of options there. Mm-hmm. And they were saying consistently seafood. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. we said, okay, there is something here. We started to talk to consumers and they explained to us, oh, this, I mean, you have to try this. It's amazing. And we started to try this with ceviche and the shrimps and the local seafood, which is very rich. And we realized, I mean, that there is an idea here. So mm-hmm. we started to change the communication to go to that. We have a couple of influencers, local chef that will go around the country, you know, doing sampling. And we tell them, hey, we need to go to the coast first. So mm-hmm. we focus our efforts to go to the coast area, the coastal area, where the seafood is very, you know, prevalent there. Mm-hmm. And they started to do all this around the seafood. And then we started to create a ritual of our brand with seafood, mm-hmm. Which is great. You know, every time that's what I have learned, you know, throughout my career, every time that you can create a ritual with something that consumers, you know, do on a high frequency basis, then you have the opportunity to connect your brand with that ritual. Is this something mm-hmm. that happens on a daily basis? Daily basis, amazing, because then you have that high frequency. And then in a category where, you know, Coca-Cola and other players have dominated for the longest time, because, you know, food, and there is no secret about it, is the largest occasion for beverage, mm-hmm. okay? It happens 3 times a day, and it represents the largest volume for any beverage. That's why so many brands have, you know, specific programs around food and around meals.
Of course,
so
of course.
If you're able to connect, you know, to make a dent, you know, in that occasion, it is huge from the business standpoint.
Yeah.
So this technology helps us to quickly adjust, you know, our strategy, go to the right place and really capture that. Actually, if you look at the volume that we have today with this product, and it's only in a single serve, small bottle and a single serve. This product already has the same volume of Sprite in that size, that market. Sprite,
wow.
Which has been, you know, decades and, you know.
Yeah, but decades in building.
Of building, right? So it gives you an idea about, you know, how you can quickly find a relevant point, a relevant proposition for consumers who listen to them.
Of course. I mean, very, very quickly, you're narrowing down exactly what the benefit is and you're scaling it.
Exactly.
You're being able to be very agile about that, you know, about that iteration and making sure that you're honing exactly like almost like laser focused, right?
That's
which
exactly
is,
right.
You know, which is fascinating. Wow. So Agile and Scrum philosophy is basically very, very important in these type of organizations, right?
It is.
Can you talk about the impact of those methodologies from what you've seen? Again, I think you had the advantage of having been in very large organizations, mm-hmm. Consulting, and now on a challenger organization. Can you talk a little bit about that and how that makes a difference?
Yeah, it is. Well, first of all, it's important to understand that Agile and Scrum methodology is not for every every problem. I mean, what we basically we apply that whenever we don't have a clear way to go or a clear solution, you know, for the issue. And that helps us to first to bring a different functions, the different skill sets into one team, okay, which, you know, you break, you know, kind of the functional organizational barriers to have one team from different perspectives, different backgrounds working together. Mm-hmm. The thing that is really important is that you really free up people and your teams to be able to work on that. Mm-hmm. If we're going to just, you know, assign somebody to work in an agile team and not removing
give them the space
from their mm-hmm. plate, you know, it's going to be crazy. People are going to get up stressed out and frustrated because they will not have the quality time to dedicate to this. So I would say that the first step is to really, you know, open the time, open the resources to be able to do that. One recent example that we had is that we acquired a kombucha company in the US. Okay, it's called Big Easy. Big Easy is the we have our own brand called Big Easy, but we also provide the kombucha and the kombucha shots to Publix. We manufacture for them the GreenWise products. So we are partners in the private label side, but we also have our own brand. One of the key challenges that we had is that we had an opportunity to create a product that was a shelf table. Okay, to give you a little bit of a quick background of the technology, when you talk about kombucha, it's a probiotic product. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like a yogurt, but probiotics require to be refrigerated, require to be chilled, mm-hmm. otherwise they will die. We were able to identify a technology that provide probiotics at a shelf stable product, at a shelf stable format. Mm-hmm. So we needed to create a concept around that. The concept originally was inspired in the tepache from Mexico, which is it's a product that you drink in the streets in Mexico. Mm-hmm. But we understood.
You drink it in plastic bags.
It used to be drinking
plastic bags. Yeah,
it's a very very common product, very kind of a down to earth. It's something that you find in the market. You know, mm-hmm. it's very very artisanal in a way because it's made with the pineapple peels and then it's fermented and mm-hmm. that fermentation is the one that brings the probiotics. So our team was able to encapsulate those probiotics and allow them to live in a shelf stable product. And then we needed to create the concept. And the concept was at the beginning tepache, but people was not understanding what tepache is. It was not a...
It's too niche.
It was a very niche and it was very small. But then we realized that there were two players growing really fast in this space, Olipop and Poppy. And they are the fastest growing, you know, players in the new soda or the gut health soda in the US. Mm-hmm. So we realized that these brands, they only have prebiotics, they only have fiber. In the tepache, you have prebiotics and probiotics, which is a very superior product from the gut health perspective. Mm-hmm. So through this agile team, we were able to quickly identify that trend, connected with a technology that we had and offer something that was far superior from the product. The product is going to be in Expo West for those of you it's going to happen at the beginning of March. So by the time that this is, you know, this is...
If it's published, probably it's already gone. Yeah.
It's already public. So you will see our product there. It's called Mighty Pop. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing product. It's very good in terms of the benefit that you can get. And it's a good example on how you use, you know, in this case, you know, an R&D team combined with a commercial team, combined with insights and brand marketing team to come up with something that was new to the industry, that was very, very good for the consumer at the end of the day.
Wow. Well, you know, very, very interesting about how to use that philosophy to really bring a product to market. You're staying in this area of case studies and examples of how to use this type of technology and guerrilla marketing to come out mm-hmm. with the new ideas and find out the right segments faster. Mm-hmm. Tell me, Tell me about Citrix. I know that you guys did something very interesting with Citrix in Mexico.
Yeah. Well, actually, with Citrix, it was in Argentina.
In Argentina. Yes, in Argentina.
In your other country.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Before the World Cup.
Yeah, exactly. Before the World Cup. Now it's well known by everyone.
Yeah.
Just to give you some context, Citrix will be the equivalent of a Simply Orange. Okay. It's a mm-hmm. not from concentrate orange juice in Argentina. In Argentina, it's also the leading brand in that market. And as a leader in that category, what we need is to expand the size of the premium orange juice segment. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we have more than 90% of that market. So there was no enough space to grow in terms of our shares. So we needed to expand the size of the pie. So what we understood is that when you look at the total opportunity, mm-hmm. When you look at the people who drink orange juice that is not from concentrate, only 20% of that is a bottle. It's a branded juice. The other 80% is from people who squeeze, you know, their oranges and get their orange juice at home. Mm-hmm. So when you look at that 80%, basically, you know, I will say that most of them, they are buying their orange, but what they don't know is that in some parts of the year, it's more expensive to buy the orange and to squeeze than to buy the juice, because we're able, because of our scale, to buy oranges and get a really good pricing for them and give mm-hmm. them not only the benefit of the convenience, but it actually gave them a really good value proposition. Mm-hmm. So what we needed to do is to identify the people who are squeezing the oranges. Mm-hmm. So in this case, we partnered with Rappi. Rappi is the leading, you know, e-commerce nowadays in Latin America, mm-hmm. because, you know, they have access to the whole basket, to the whole shopping basket of consumers. Mm-hmm. And they know not only if they're buying juices, they know if they're buying anything. Mm-hmm. So through them, they were able to identify people who had in their shopping basket oranges. And, mm-hmm. and we know the kind of orange that people use for orange juice versus the one they use for eating. And we started to do a direct program to those consumers. Mm-hmm. Actually, we started to do them in a specific occasion, which is the breakfast. Mm-hmm. You know, we also knew from our understanding of that consumer that breakfast is the occasion where you are more willing to buy a bottled product because you need that convenience. Everyone is running, you know, around the house. There is no time to do everything. So convenience is very important in that occasion. Mm-hmm. So we started to provide a specific promotion for oranges for breakfast or orange juice for breakfast. Mm-hmm. And particularly during the World Cup, we did some interesting promotions with croissants and Citrix, directing that to those consumers who are buying oranges and squeezing them. Mm-hmm. And it's been fantastic. You know, so far it's really helping us to increase the size of the pie. It's really helping us to go directly to those consumers. We know that they will still squeeze their oranges for other occasions when they have time, but at least we're getting into their life. We're getting into specific occasions.
What I love about all of these examples is how you guys have been able to very smartly use information that it's available, partners, technology, use performance data to really fine tune and find the audiences that you think you can grow your product in, and really scale that, right? You know, test that, and if it works, scale it. I mean, I think it's a fantastic example of a direct-to-consumer product that is using performance marketing tools to be able to grow market and a segment. So fascinating.
It is. Let me tell you something else about that product. That product, we started to export that to China. Mm-hmm. Also about a year and a half ago. In China, it's very interesting because in China you have a cross-border market, okay, where basically it's an e-commerce marketplace where Chinese consumers, they're allowed to spend around $400 a month in products that are imported and are cross-border products. Mm-hmm. So you go to the Tmall, for example, the Tmall section of the cross-border, and you can buy anything. You can buy, you know, furniture, tires. You can buy you know, CPG product, you can buy juices, okay? Mm-hmm. So what we did was to set up a, you know, a small team in Hong Kong, and then they are now, you know, moving to Shanghai, for them to start using the Tmall cross-country area to test new products, okay? So basically, there is a very low cost, very low investment. You just bring the products, usually have an influencer who will do a streamlining and will talk about the product. And based on the reaction of consumers, we can test very quickly if the product is relevant or not relevant.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This is a product that I started a year and a half ago. It did really well in the cross-border. Now we are registering this product to be in the mainstream e-commerce in China. And the last news that we got is that it is going offline. So it's going to stores in China.
Oh, wow.
It's already going to bakeries, and it's going to the Walmart stores in China. But it's also, I would say, in this case, it's more innovation or incubation from a geographic standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how you can, you know, adapt or test different propositions to markets that are very new to you in a way that doesn't require a huge investment. But yeah. But if you do it face by face to be able to achieve that.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about something that that I see that it's a challenge, right? When you use performance marketing channels and digital channels, which is marketing integration, right? How do you unify, you know, when you have multiple campaigns in multiple channels, there's a need to unify messages, brand messages, right? In a very fragmented media world, right? Because you might have a TV ad, a radio ad, an outdoor ad, and then all of your digital versions, right?
Yeah.
Tell me about the challenges and the importance of being able to unify all of those messages.
Yeah, that certainly is a challenge. And I would say it's a challenge more now than it used to be, because now you have many people touching the brand. You know, you have community managers, you know, generating content for the brand that is real time, that you cannot approve every single thing that you have to publish, otherwise you're gonna get kind of a, you know, all in mm-hmm. your news. I would say that the two most important things for you to you know, to manage that is, first one is to have a very clear positioning for your brand that everyone understands, and that is something that is shared by everyone who is touching the brand, because in that way, the stories that you tell about your brand are consistent across the different mm-hmm. touch points.
Mm-hmm.
When you have that, you know, old-fashioned, you know, brand architecture, okay, really well-defined, and that makes sense. You know, it has a connection between the intrinsic, the functional, and the emotional benefits of the brand. Then it makes it a lot easier, you know, for everyone to sing the same song from the musical scores. So mm-hmm. I would say that's the first one, the first step that we make sure that we have that clarity. And the second one is to be open to ideas, because what happens is that if you get too rigid, you know, in your message, if you get too stuck in your story, you may miss some opportunities, mm-hmm. okay? Like the one that I was mentioning before about the Wittig lemonade. If you get stuck into, hey, this has to be only for dinner, and, mm-hmm. and you miss the opportunity of positioning this beverage around the seafood, then you will be missing a huge opportunity. It has happened to us a lot. I mean, we launched a product last year that was a failure. I mean, it didn't work. It was an energy drink with a sports drink with hydration. But it, you know, consumers didn't really get, you know, the concept. We were not clear in the way that we're communicating the concept. The taste was not, you know, in their expectations, and the whole thing didn't work, because when mm-hmm. you when you add, you know, electrolytes, which is usually sodium salt, you know, to a beverage, it will change the taste. And they had an expectation of certain taste for that brand. You mm-hmm. launch something with salt, and it completely changed your expectation. And you have to be able to be alert, to listen to that, and to be able to pivot, you know, from that point to the next one, to adjust your communication. So I will say that if you have a clear positioning of what you intend to satisfy as a brand, And second, you stay flexible, alert to new opportunities. So you bend, but you don't break in mm-hmm. the sense of your communication. Then that will give you a better chance to have a well integrated communication in the marketplace.
Okay. Yeah, that you know that makes sense. I like the phrase bend but don't break. I think that's very very useful to remember. So, in your opinion, what do you think are the main marketing trends we should be paying attention in, you know, in 2023, 2024, you know, what's coming in your opinion?
I am very, in that sense, very category focused or very kind of a, you know, brand specific or category specific, you know, trends that I will give you. I hope that when we go to Expo West, we see a lot of this in, you know, in real life, you know, and a lot of the things that we'll see in that, mm-hmm. that Expo. Mm-hmm. But I think that there are certain trends that will remain, you know, after COVID. Others are changing or are evolving, you know, from that. I think that the COVID was a big awakening for everyone in terms of the functionality, the expectation of functionality from everything that we eat, that we drink. Because we are in this situation where we're very exposed and we need to do something about it. Mm-hmm. So what we have seen is that all products related to immunity, they remain relevant. You know, this pandemic is not over. You know, there's still, wave that have come after that. So people continue to be very, very focused on immunity, on protecting themselves and their dear ones. Mm-hmm. That trend, we see that we launched a product from Petit, from our juice called Immunity, which is a blend of different juices and vegetables that provide that and is doing really well. The other trend that we see is in terms of energy, consumers are not only looking for high energy or energizing products, but they're looking also for de-energizing products. Mm-hmm. Okay. Something that also has become very evident is that one of the most important ways to age well or not is how much you can recover at night during your sleep. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. so products that allow you to relax, to really fully rest at night are products that are trending. And people are, once you understand the concept of energy, you get into the concept of energy management. So you have high energy, but you have also, I want to be able to disconnect, you know, especially when you're working from home. I want to be able at, you know, 6, 7, whatever the time that you stop, you want to, you know, relax and go to the next phase in your life. Mm-hmm. That's one that is also becoming, you know, very evident there. In terms of fruits and juices, it continues to be an issue, sugar, you know, and calories. So consumers are looking more and more for products that give you the functionality without the sugar. So there is a slowdown and even a decline in certain segments of uses. So people are looking for more for the product like a Bi or Body Armor, which mm-hmm. will give you the benefits with certain amount of use, but not 100%, but mm-hmm. will give you all the benefits, the functionality you can get either in terms of detox or immunity, etc. So those are some of the main trends. I would say that in terms of e-commerce, it continues. You know, the trend, there was a big acceleration mm-hmm. during the COVID. Maybe we'll not see the same level of accelerated growth. We'll continue to see consumers adopting and moving into categories. Especially once they know the product, they are moving into subscription basis for, mm-hmm. for beverage that they like. And this for us is very important because as a challenger, at the beginning, you're not able to be everywhere.
Yeah, distribution is a challenge.
So distribution is a challenge. So for us to be able to be in, you know, we have our products in Amazon. Okay, is in Amazon. You can find it. Mighty Pop will be in Amazon. Mm-hmm. So you will be able to source or to provide to anywhere without having necessarily to be in the offline channels.
Wow. Well, excellent, Ray. This has been a very interesting, very, very interesting conversation. Definitely, totally different from all of the podcasts that we've recorded, because I think this is the first conversation we have with a consumer product that it's also a tech product in the sense of it of the way it behaves. I appreciate all of your insights. Fascinating experience, fascinating examples. I hope we can have you again sometime in the future.
Sure.
Let's say for a second conversation to see how everything went in Vegas, maybe. And well, thank you so much for your time, and thanks everyone for listening to this podcast. And see you on our next episode.
Awesome. Thank you very much for the opportunity. Thank you.